Welcome, everyone, to episode 3 of the Strategy Wargamers. I'm G. Marcinek, I'll be your host, and I have with me, from the Bitstreamers, Mark Van... how do you pronounce it? Kasterin, right? Did I get it right?
Correct.
Yes, awesome. Good. Welcome, Mark. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you very much for inviting me to your hangout session today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time out and doing it. I mean, I know you're very busy, and especially with your upcoming release. You're coming out with a new app for this week for the iPad.
Yeah, that's correct. We're quite busy since two Fridays ago, because at that point of time, App approved the current version, and from that moment we spent lots of time on contacting the various websites throughout the world to brief them of this upcoming release, provide the promo codes. So main effort is going on in that domain currently, and yeah, we're getting a little bit anxious looking towards coming Thursday, because that will be a magical moment for us, at least in this period of the year. And in parallel, we already started with our third title, the development. So,
So you're already ahead of the game. You're already on to your next application.
Yes. Yeah, so this is not our second shot, and then we'll hide and from the earth. So basically, what we're gonna, what we want to do is bring additional titles from different periods of history on the iPad. And after this title, we'll deliberately follow a different path than most publishers do. So you'll not see another title, the Second World War, for example, because most of the publishers do that. Yeah. So we want to move into the territory of less known battles or periods in history, which nevertheless make an interesting setting for a hex-based war game. So the next title will be about the Seven Years' War.
Oh, which, wow.
Yeah, occurred between 1765 and 1763, at least within Europe, on the mainland. And that will feature six battles that Frederick the Great fought against the Austrians, the French, and the Russians.
Yeah, that was a big war right there.
Yep.
A lot of people consider that the first major world war. I mean, everybody considers World War I being the first world war, but I consider that because that involved pretty much every major power in the world.
Yeah, if you look at it from... the main powers that were involved in that war, that you can really classify it as the true First World War. And also, if you take in account the various geographical locations on Earth where these battles took place. So it was North America, it were the Indies, it was the mainland of Europe, it was India. So everywhere around the globe, it was English versus French and Spanish. And in order to have lots of troops available on the English side to fight off the French and the Spanish in the colonies, they asked the Prussians to fight the war on the mainland in Europe. And they have subsidized the Prussian Empire to fight this war. So they didn't have much regiments or foot to invest themselves on the Europe main theater. So they could ship them all to other places in the world, and that's why England was able to kick out the French and the Spanish in the U.S. and in Canada in the end.
Mm. That's very interesting.
Yeah, one can really conclude that as one of the real first world wars, and not the one that is labeled as the first world war.
So this is probably going to be a bigger project than the American Civil War, because I mean you're looking at a major game here, because I mean you're looking at different sections of the world. I mean in the Civil War you just you're focusing on a few key battles in certain parts of the country, but this one you're looking at certain key battles in parts of the world.
Yeah, but the first next title is called 7 Years' War, and it only focuses on the battles that took place on the Europe mainland. So we get a subset of the period.
Okay, nice. Wow. Getting back to Battlefield Civil War. It's releasing this Thursday on the iPad through the Apple Store. Questions that I have about it, just off the, just out of my head here. I knew you guys had a previous Civil War game, but what made you decide to redo to start up fresh? Because you came out with another game, which was actually called the Civil War game, and then now you have Battlefield Civil War, and it seems they look very different from one another.
That's correct. Yeah. Let me outline the background of that. So when we initially carved out the ID for our first iPad game, which became Civil War the Battle Game, we decided deliberately, so it was no mistake, to go for a kind of retro style from a graphical perspective in combination with the hex-based war game. And as Rolls, bless you,
sorry.
And as Lowell's in marketing have always told us, if you make a move with your product or your offering that is quite different from the competition, there are two possible outcomes. You either massively outperform the competition or you massively underperform. Well, we ended up in the last one of the two. So, triggered by that, we decided, hey, it's clear that the combination of retro-style graphics with hex-based wargaming is not addressing any audience, regardless whether it's the seasoned wargamers, regardless it's newbies who want to get into wargaming. So that was the main trigger to do something completely different. And also evading the mistakes we had made on the decision of the design and interface and all kinds of aspects, was that instead of doing everything on our own, we built up quite some relationships within the community due to our first title, and we simply got in touch with them and started asking, hey, we're going for a second game, different style, more serious, but we also want to improve the whole thing. Eh? So basically what we have now is the team is the same, so it's the American Civil War, but that's basically, and it's a hex-based war game, but that's where the similarities stop. And that's really due to the fact that we've spoken with a lot of seasoned war gamers and taken a lot of their feedback in account. And then at the last phases in development, so the last 2 months, so starting basically beginning of December last year, we recruited various testers, and luckily quite some people who volunteered have quite a long background in wargaming, have been developing board war games themselves or in any way related to developing or testing board or war games. So the feedback we got from that phase was also enormous, and then really helping us to polish the game to an even better level. Mm-hmm. So having outlined all that, the whole development process from quite an internal oriented approach, just sitting together with the team of the Bitstreamers themselves, we have really started listening to the community and taking all kinds of feedback from various angles in account, and polish the engine, and step by step created what we have on the table now.
I got a chance to play one of your early copies of the Civil War Battlefield Civil War, comparing that to Civil War, the battle game, I noticed a complete difference map and the way the game is portrayed. I feel it's a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for, more real. I could actually identify which cores. There's actually even a unit, excuse me, I have asthma, so pops up often. But basically, yeah, you have your units, and you have the name of the core as well as the division commander. So I thought that was really cool that you guys put that in there, because it was just not blank units that I'm like, okay, I'll move this guy here, move that there. I actually, while playing, I try to keep the cores together, you know. And I do find that it's really cool. And believe it or not, I'm playing this more than I'm playing any other game right now, because it's just that addicting. Currently, that I'm, you know, it's very easy to get into. That was the biggest thing that I picked up on. The learning curve that you guys put in there is very... I literally turned on the game. I don't play tutorials. I don't believe in them. Within about 2-3 minutes, I learned how to play. I was already in the game. I already knew how to play the game. I knew what each statistic you had pointed there meant. So, I mean, I really got into the game. Within 5 minutes, I was already in my first scenario, and I knew everything. I knew basically what everything did. So I got to give you guys props to that, because not a lot of developers do that. A lot of people put a lot of complex stuff in there, and you have to spend like 10, 20 minutes trying to see, okay, this does that, this does that, this does that. And then after 20 minutes, then you can say, all right, now I'm ready to play.
Well, it's good to hear that. And what's interesting, especially, is that you mentioned that you figured it out quickly on your own without playing the tutorial. Nevertheless, we put in this tutorial triggered by also an experience from our first game, where lots of people complained about getting into the game. And during the test phase around the whole tutorial, we deliberately picked people who have never played hex-based war games ever. With the background in, let's say, at the Apple or at the PC, with, for example, Panzer General, or on game consoles, there are also tons of hex-based war games. But we deliberately picked out people who either never touched war games or hardly play games at all. And we simply handed over the iPad and simply watched how they reacted to the instructions. And that's the way we really polished the whole instructional thing, so that people, as long as they can read English, they can get into the thing. And that was quite an interesting learning phase for ourselves as well, because to guys like us and someone like you, there's no discussion about what's, for example, infantry, cavalry, and artillery. Yeah? It's all quite clear. But you will be surprised if you go into the more casual gamer corner that some people, they've heard about cavalry and they've heard about artillery, but they don't really automatically know what key differences in behavior or properties are between these different units. And that's really why we decided to bring a very to-the-point tutorial, which coaches you step by step to the various options and parameters during the game, so that everyone who's able to read the text in the tutorial and finish it is able to play the game.
Huh? Yeah, that was very important for me, and I think you guys did a phenomenal job. You guys got me addicted to another game. I don't know if I even have time to even play all these things, but I appreciate it. I do have a couple of questions that I wanted to talk to you about. I wanted to see, in terms of like your development studio, are you guys full-time? Are you guys doing Battlefield Civil War as well as the previous game? Is that your full-time position, or do you guys do this on the side?
No, it's a bit of a mixed mode. So we're mixed back. So some of us are occupied with this full-time and some part-time. But it's not an overnight hobby where some people just spend 5 hours a week on. So, again, it's a mixed bag.
Okay, cool. How big is your development team? Like, I mean, how many people did you guys start out with when you had the Civil War, the battle game? And then how many people do you have today?
We have a small team which consists of 2 people. And one of them is me. And then besides that, we have a guy who's doing the audio and the music.
Okay. Let's see what else. I wanted to see, like, when you, for a lot of people that are interested in developing their own app, I wanted to see how difficult was it for you to make an iPad game? Like, what are the challenges that you ran into? Because I know Apple was putting out SDKs, and some developers saying that it's very beneficial. Others are saying, you know, that that it's not, that you would need some coding experience. For people that are interested in developing their own iPad game, can you shed some light on that?
Sure, I can. So it has a little bit to do with the actual background of what one has done in the past on another system. So the reason why I was able to get into the Apple iOS SDK and the Objective-C language quite fast was due to the fact that I have in the past programmed in C++ on BOS, which long ago used to be one of the two operating systems developed by Apple, and then OS X was the one they formally chose, and BOS went then with their main developer started on their own company and drove this operating system themselves, and that SDK and that interface, the API of the different libraries, is so similar with Apple's Xcode environment that for me it was quite easy to use that knowledge and experience and convert it into creating something for Apple. So just to give you a very technical example, if you define an image within Xcode, it's called a UE image as an object. And under the BOS operating system, it was called a B image. So the concept is exactly the same. It's just two different capital letters at the first part of the object name, but the whole concept is the same. So for me, it was just about finding out, hey, I'm used to these specific graphical user interface libraries and blah, blah, blah. How does it look like on Xcode and Apple's iOS? But people that don't have such a reference, they start from scratch. They first have to figure out, hey, how does an SDK work? How does a language construct work? Are the libraries made up? What's on offer there? What I do need to do myself? So the learning curve is really related to one's background in development as a whole. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm very positive about this whole environment, this development environment, because it's also it's comprehensive. So as a developer, you really spend your time on the logic in your app. You're not wasting time on creating a driver to create a sound. You just create a sound object, you add a real sound to it, and at a certain point in the code, you play that sound if there's a need for playing that specific sound. So one focuses really on the logic of the whole app instead of how do I address the screen, how do I address the sound chip, and blah, blah, blah. So the abstraction level enables one to quite quickly develop apps. What's also quite good from Apple is that it takes lots of worries from developers away. So if you look, for example, at the Android platform, there's so much diversity with these tablets. So one has this resolution, one has that. Yeah. And a programmer has to take that into himself. But for example, with the iPad, and it applies as well for the iPhone, but our titles are only for the iPad. So if you, for example, create an object which holds a picture or an image of, let's say, the whole screen, it shows a main menu, and it's made out of a picture, then you simply, in the code, you refer to, for example, the menu picture object, and you set it with the name, for example, main menu.png, and refer to a specific picture in your app. Mm-hmm. Now, instead of putting that specific file name in your app, you put two pictures in there, one called main menu at ipad.png, and the other you call main menu at 2x.png, meaning the Retina version, and then you put both pictures in your app, in your build, and the result is that the app itself determines whether it's running on a Retina or a non-Retina iPad, and loading the different image depending on which iPad is running on. So you as a coder, developer, don't have to think about one moment, hey, now I need to change the file name because I'm running on a Retina iPad. So that's all already done by the iOS software itself and development environment. So all these kinds of things that look relatively minor, when you add them all together, it really provides you with a quite an excellent development environment and library.
Cool. And so basically, if you have some knowledge of coding, you can literally you know, jump right in, learn a few things, and basically start making your own game in essence.
Yeah. Yeah, and what's also quite good is that due to the fact there's quite a community on the web from various coders, that if you run into a specific issue, you just Google it, and there's a high likelihood that someone else had run into that issue as well, and an answer is already posted as a reply to that specific problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the power of the web.
Yep. So in I think the almost 3 years that we're developing, or 2.5 years we're developing on iOS, we've only twice run into something we couldn't directly solve ourselves or find on the internet. And then after some extensive debugging, we found that it was a specific bug in the iOS itself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but again, most things are quite easy to find on the internet or in books. So it's much easier to code these days than it used to be when the Commodore 64 or the Sinclair or the Amiga, those were different days. There you really spent lots of time on how to address the hardware, how to get the optimum speed and blah, blah, blah. But this is really about focusing on game logic.
Nice. That's really cool. Yeah, I remember those days were really really difficult. They were not as easy as it is today to develop for anything. And I remember back in the day when I was developing for web pages, you know, back HTML, and it was so high in demand, you can get a salary for $80,000 making a website half the quality of what it is today. And but now, I mean, you got like Squarespace, you got all these websites that you just literally, they give you a template, you just click, type in your name, you type in a company name, whatever, and you're done. You got yourself a website, just, you know, that quick and that easy. So yeah, definitely the game has changed for the better. I'm glad it does, it has, because with it being simpler, hopefully more and more people will get into making their own apps and bringing their vision so everybody can share it. That's something I'm looking forward to. One thing that I wanted to ask you was because a lot of our viewers probably are not familiar, but you're from you're currently living in the Netherlands.
Yep.
So my question I had for you is, you're in the Netherlands and you made two Civil War games for the American Civil War. How difficult was it for you guys to do that? Because I mean, you're on the other side of the ocean. I can imagine, you know, it's not like you're actually going to drive to Gettysburg and say, all right, this is where the house is, and you know.
True. So looking and experiencing the real battlefield, that's a challenge because you don't jump in the plane to the U.S. on a daily basis, let alone spend weeks of visiting the various battlefields, although it's on my wish list nevertheless. And indeed, in Europe, that's quite easy because in driving distance of, let's say, between 1 and 10 hours, if that would be your range, then you can visit quite some battlefields from different periods in time. And indeed, we were not able to visit the actual battlefields. Nevertheless, there's so much information also on the battlefields themselves. available on the internet that you can find out lots of stuff without even leaving the home. And besides that, in the living room there are tons of books about military history, about various battles. So I've some books about the U.S. Or American Civil War.
I could also imagine you probably used Google Maps a lot.
Yeah, those things, and zoom in indeed, and to compare things, and true. So we're quite helped with the fact that internet does exist. If we would be still be in developing on non-internet connected devices, and you had to develop such a title, it would really require much more effort on the whole research part of getting to the game.
Yeah, I could imagine that was that'd be a lot more difficult if there was no internet. I mean, you're basically going off books at that point, and yeah, like, if there was no internet, we would probably wouldn't have any iPads or iPhones to begin with. So, I kind of remember those days too, because I remember the early 90s when none of us had the internet. We were all on lucky one of us had like 28K or, you know, those early modems. You know, I mean, you couldn't even download a web page, much less an application at that point.
Yep.
You know, back in that day. But yeah, one other topic that I want to talk to you about is what inspired you to do this game? I mean, this is Battlefield Civil War. You're covering, I mean, I was playing Gettysburg and a couple other scenarios they had in there. But what inspired you to do it? I mean, you're in Europe. You're next to some of the most critical battlefields this world's ever seen. And what made you decide, let's do the American Civil War?
Well, that's relating back to my own personal interest in military history. Mm-hmm. And basically, my interest ranges from the Roman Empire until the Second World War. And then you have, of course, tons of options. But why we started with the American Civil War as our first and now our second title was a very simple one. If you, one of the other team members is quite seasoned in internet marketing and knows a lot about Google Analytics and things around that. And he started simply finding out how often people around the world Google the name of a certain battle. And we did that with Napoleonic battles, we did that with American Civil War battles, we did that with Seven-Year War battles and some others here and there. And then you see already a huge difference in the amount of queries around American Civil War battles and Napoleonic battles. So it was purely triggered by, first, the fact that we have interest in the topic, and secondly, that depending on how much queries people pop in or type in Google, that somehow gives you a feeling about what's your maximal addressable market. If we would, for example, decide to create a title on the Mexican Adventure, in where the U.S. in roughly 1848 had quite some years of conflict with Mexico about the territories which are currently California, New Mexico, Texas, and so, then that would maybe only address one of 10 people compared to U.S. Civil War. So by selecting a certain time frame and historical period, you also set your maximum potential reachable sales level.
Mm.
On the other hand, what I also mentioned earlier during this session is that from next title onwards, we'll deliberately go approach a different route and not address things others are already addressing. We're not going to bring out the 10th Second World War app, and we're not going to bring out the 10th Napoleonic game. There are lots of other studios and developers that have done that and are good at that. And we will go more to a market where no one has brought out titles, or maybe there has been one title on an ancient system, and do that good with some key battles. So instead of then having a competition between other developers where everyone or six or seven have a Second World War app, we take in account that the market for 7 Years War app, or what, regardless one will pick thereafter, is smaller, but due to the fact that we're the only one with such an app, that compensates that a bit.
Nice. Yeah, that's a small way of looking at it right there. So when somebody types in 7 Years War, boom, you're the first one that pops up.
Yep.
That's really good. That's and you know, I mean, people do buy games based upon the battle that they're interested in, like you were saying. But you know, I mean, I do the same thing. However, I also buy games that have a really good interface. So, for example, I'm not really into Roman era games. However, if I find a game that has some really unique controls, similar to like Rome Total War, where I actually got into it because it provided a new depth of looking at the game and controlling units and the graphics at the time, I was really kind of taken back. And I was actually playing an ancient, you know, a Roman era war game, which I never thought I would. So, I mean, there's different ways, you know, I mean, to look at it. And, I mean, you're already killing it with this with this new game that you're coming out with. And then with 7 Years War, I think that's going to be really good, because we will have a Civil War game, we'll have a 7 Years War, and then you probably have a couple of titles lined up beyond that. So hopefully we can get the whole market.
If the interest is there, then we'll keep on coming with new battles and new teams.
Yeah. And
what we not want to do is, let's say, just squeeze in some new battles. We also want to improve and expand the game. So the objective there is not to, let's say, have a Battlefield Civil War and just label it Battlefield 7 Years War with different battles. So we'll adapt the AI, we'll add some other bits and bytes to really make the game even more interesting.
Now, one question I have based upon what you were just mentioning, the game that I'm playing right now, one of the scenarios is Gettysburg. So because I'm a big Gettysburg fan, but one question I had, and if you were going to do Battlefield's Civil War or Battlefield 7 Years War, how difficult would it be to put, like, let's say, a sandbox mode where you have like a whole map of the, let's say, the East Coast, or maybe the Western Theater, and have the Southern and the Northern states, and have something like that? How difficult would that be to implement for a Civil War game if you were going to add something like that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you exactly... I hear what you're saying, yeah? But I'm not really sure what you mean by that. So are you referring to something like, instead of jumping into a specific battle, that you're forced to follow a certain campaign, and then by, for example, a map screen, you first get a view of the first battle that's fought as part of a specific campaign, or do you mean that different?
Well, I meant something like, for example, like you have scenarios currently. Would it ever be possible to kind of like do a sandbox where you have 1861, you give the units to the player, and you know they're in the north, and then you give units to the computer that's in the south, and you say just have at it, just
okay. So you mean that people can set up their own battle?
Yeah. How difficult would that? The reason I'm asking is because I was kind of interested in doing a game like that. Where I would do a sandbox mode like that, and since you already made this game, I wanted to get your experience on how difficult would something like that be.
Okay, let me think a bit. So, it starts, of course, with adding a user interface and a specific screen where one could place all these units.
Mm-hmm.
And so it means you have a kind of visual representation where one can select the different types of units and drag them or touch them, and then touch them on the map. And so that's quite completely non-existent currently. Yeah. So if you really refer to creating it within the iPad itself, so when you as a user started the app, then one needed an additional button, create sandbox battle, and then you would need this complete currently non-existing user interface. So it's not a challenge from, let's say, an intelligence perspective. I mean, it's quite straightforward to code, but it's a lot of work. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, oh, how do I do that? But it's a lot of work. And then on top, it also has where units stand and how units move is of course related from the computer side, is of course related how the AI is developed and works. And I'm not sure if the current AI would work as it works in the existing battles for a sandbox battle. Because, just to give you an example, over time we've improved the movement algorithm for the computer opponent. And during testing phases, it was found out that indeed, in general, the movement improved massively, with the result that computer units would not, let's say, distribute themselves to complete different sides of the map. If I painted a bit of black and white, if I make it look extreme, but really stay in its own vicinity, and thereby making it more difficult for the human player to attack. Now, once I recoded that, it seemed to work well. But then it turned out that in maps where there's lots of crossing of big rivers, that the algorithm ran into an issue there, that it was more difficult for you to cross the bridge. So having said that, if one would also create its own map with more than just a flat map, because I suppose one would like some elevation, mountains, forests, because all these things have influence on both sight range and combat range. On sight range and movement range. And that will then also have massive, a serious impact on the movement AI. There would need to be some additional functionality on top of the current one to make sure that you don't end up in a situation where one creates a map and sets up the various units, and then the computer ends up staying quite defensive. Because that's a thing we don't like in at least when you look back at all the hex-based war games. For example, Panzer General. I suppose you know the game that was on the PC ages ago.
Yeah.
On that time. And at that time, I loved the game. I still love the game series from SSI. But at that time, when I was not coding strategy games myself, I thought, hey, it's great to play the Germans. But now, after having coded myself, I understand the whole thing, because if you as a player play a side which is the aggressor, then it means that the artificial intelligence for the more passive and defending side is less difficult to code.
Yeah, because it's on the defensive, it doesn't really have to analyze
exactly. Movement. So, having mentioned all that, sandbox would be possible, but it's not a 2-week, 8-hour activity. It would mean several months of coding and testing.
Oh, wow. So it would require a lot of work, in essence.
Yeah.
That was it's interesting. Thank you for answering that. I was it was just an idea I had. I was playing around with the last couple of years to develop a sandbox war game for the iPad. I was thinking of originally doing it for the desktop, but you know what? I find myself a lot doing a lot. I mean, I currently have my iMac, which I'm currently using right now, and I use that for like heavy gaming if I play Battlefield or if I do video editing or anything like that. But I find myself most of the time on my iPad, and I take it with me and everything like that. So I decided, hey, you know what? I was thinking of making a game like that for the tablet market because I think it would be kind of cool, you know, be on lunch and then jump in a game similar to what I'm doing with your game right now, where I'm going on lunch, opening up the game, and going through my whole lunch and and spending it playing Battlefield Civil War, which is really cool. A lot of people will say, hey, you know, you're wasting time. You should be more productive. But that's the way I like to enjoy myself. I like playing Civil War battle games. People my job don't understand that, but it's a niche market.
No, but it's quite recognizable. I mean, I use this one as well quite often. So I'm mainly behind the iMac when I'm developing. It's 80% of what I do behind the iMac developing, and most other stuff it's the iPad. So I completely recognize what you're describing and outlining here, and you see it around you. I mean, it's not just in the game environment. If I look around me, what people do with tablets in offices and It's really a major change in how people use information technology.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when we had the old desktops with the monitors that had the big ass hanging out from the back of it, and you know, freaking Pentium processors and PowerPC processors that were barely able to do the internet and then nothing else, and now we're able to do internet and video editing. This free Google Hangout while, you know, going to be doing video editing alongside it. I mean, it's just amazing how we progress. I always talk with customers I work with at my job, and they always get amazed at how fast technology is going. Even in the last couple of years, I've noticed, like, going from the wireless N standard to the wireless AC standard, which is just, 2 years ago or a year ago, and the leap that wireless technology is taking with it. It's just, I keep getting amazed every time I come into work and I there's some new standard, there's some new technology coming out, and it's going to revolutionize this. It's just, it's amazing how fast we're going.
Yes, it is.
I also had another question about your game. I've been playing it on my iPad. However, I got one question for you. Is there any possibility for an iPhone version for Battlefield Civil War?
That's a good question, and you're not the first one who asks for it. The first thing is, of course, there's two aspects which differ with the iPad. One is, of course, the quite concrete one, being the smaller screen size. And that would automatically result that the amount of hexes that are visible is quite limited at the same point of time. Mm-hmm. So then secondly, if we talk about the strategical zoom where you see the complete map on the iPad, and where you also you see the town names, and where you see the unit names described on corps level, then that's not going to fly on a small screen. So it would mean that we have to come up with another way of managing this information. And I don't have this answer on how to do that without sacrificing playability and the amount of information a player really needs at a certain point in the game. So if it would be, let's say, a game where there would be only one scale of the map and you couldn't go to another level to get more or different information, mm-hmm. then it would be doable if a player would be accepting the fact that the amount of hexes on the screen would be limited. Nevertheless, we will, during this year, have a look at it, but it's not the first thing on the list.
That's fine. I still got the iPad version, but if you guys do make an iPhone version, I would appreciate that, because there's certain places I go with my iPhone, you know, especially like, you know, I'm at work, there's only places I can bring in phone, not a tablet, and I can just, you know, pop out, do a couple of moves, which is probably not what I should be doing, but, you know.
No, I can, I fully can understand your use case here.
Another question about the iPad. What kind of iPads is this going to go on? It works on my iPad Air. However, I didn't try it on my first-gen iPad. Do you know if it's going to be iPad 1, 2?
No, it's iPad 2 and up. So the requirement here is that it needs to be an iPad with iOS 7, and that automatically rules out the iPad 1.
Oh, okay. Yeah, iPad 1 is, I think, stuck on 5.1.
It's not that we wanted that, but... due to the fact that compared with our first title, we've added so much information to the units that if you would be able to run it on or compile it on iOS 5 and run it on an iPad 1, you would probably want to throw your iPad away because of the slow scrolling speed once you move the map. That was the key thing. So the speed of the iPad 1 is not on par with what we require, with the amount of detail which we have in the actual game. And then there's also, of course, another thing that by Apple users, by default, update quick and upgrade quick. So compared to, for example, Android, it's really a jungle of different versions on different tablets. But with iPad, if Apple brings out a new iOS release, within a month, a big substantial part of the user base has updated its software. Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is paradise for developers, because you don't have to worry about a previous version. Yeah. Apple has a good habit, by the way, it's not just a habit, but a good habit of improving their libraries as well. But the side effect of that is that, for example, if you develop Game Center code for iOS 5, that a lot of the functionality there has been replaced with new iOS Game Center, iOS 7 functionality, and it means that you have to adjust the code. So even if I would, at this point of time, want to create a very slow, turtle-speed iPad 1 version, all the Game Center-related functionality wouldn't work anymore.
Okay.
In that sense, we're, as developers, always pushed by Apple to move along with improvements they make in the various libraries.
Now, since you have Game Center integration inside... the new iOS 7 Game Center. I know Apple put a lot of really cool Game Center improvements with iOS 7. One improvement that I noticed a lot of developers are doing, I was just curious if Battlefield Civil War has it. Are you guys going to implement like a timeout rule? I noticed this happens a lot when I play some people. I'll do a turn and it'll be their turn. And then sometimes they'll take like a week, sometimes 2 weeks. And at the end of 2 weeks, I usually just cancel the game because they're that slow doing it. Is there a feature like that in the game? Or
No, you're correct that such a feature exists in iOS 7, but we have not implemented it in the current version of our game.
Okay. Possibly in the future, maybe?
If there's a requirement or a request from various users, we'll get that on board.
Okay.
I mean, awesome. It's not like we'll be the 1.0 and that after the 1.0 we start forgetting about it. So to be honest, we already have some things on the table for the 1.1, but let's first have a launch and then look at what the 1.1 will bring.
Cool, awesome. You were talking about Android tablets. Are you guys planning to in the future, do you think it'll ever come? This game will ever come to Android tablets or Android phones?
Yeah, well, never say never, but it's not the first thing I think about when I wake up, because it's a jungle of different hardware, of different OS versions, and it's not, let's say, making life easier for a developer. So on the technical side, and what I hear from others that develop for Android is that also the SDK has its challenges. Yeah. So in short, on the technical side, it's a step backward, and I don't like step backward. And there's also this commercial angle to it. So although what we've seen over the last year that the Android tablets and phones have caught on and even surpassed sales of Apple, the amount of sales that's made on the App Store is still twice as high than on the Android App Stores. Yeah, so it means that the likelihood that you will sell an app on iOS is simply two times higher than on Android.
And yeah, that's an article on that.
And if you add that with the added technical complexity, then it means maybe that to have the same earning, you have maybe two times more effort on both the development and marketing side to balance the thing out. And that in the context that we don't have the intention to grow to a very big team, so we don't want to end up with 30, 40 people, yeah? Because then you get in all these default things you see with corporate environments that management gets involved and creativity gets a different spot than it has in smaller companies. So we want to keep things fun, creative, stimulating. And in that context, I rather would invest in setting up a development line for iPhone as a second thing than getting an Android branch.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. There were articles online where we were talking about that where most people don't buy anything on Android. They get the free versions. So developers don't make money there. And you were telling me about the screen size and processors. I was reading an article where they were diving into that. They were saying it's about 8,000 different varieties of Android and becomes a headache to develop for it, especially when you're making less money than you would on the iPhone App Store. One good example of this was I remember Grand Theft Auto came out back in November, and it worked on literally every iPad. It went from, I think, iPad 1, 2, 3, 4, up to the iPad Air, and all the way from, I think, the 3GS iPhone, which was, 2009? That was long ago. All the way up to the 5S now, and pretty much all the iPods. It worked basically perfectly on all of them, but then I saw on YouTube, they did a review on the Android devices. Half of them crashed, so they only put it on 3 Android devices. Two of them didn't work, and one of them was not working so well. And I've noticed that, you know, whenever a game comes out on Android, it's never good, like you were mentioning, it's different screen sizes, different processors, and it becomes a headache for you guys to make it. So I see your point, and so I guess people that have Androids, I guess you can just switch to Apple, and I guess you'll be able to get and play the games that you want to.
Yep.
Let's see what else. Going back to the 7 Years War, I just wanted to touch base. Have you guys started developing for this new game that you're starting up?
Yes, we started a few weeks ago, like I mentioned earlier. And we have currently 2 battles already available, so we can test out the different mechanics that we have implemented there. So, and if things go as planned, then we expect a launch roughly around June. So just before the summer break.
Wow, this year?
This year, yeah.
Wow. Wow, you guys are working really hard, aren't you?
That's one thing. But as part of the current title, Battlefield Civil War, during this whole development process, we've thought a lot about what can we do in order to speed up development of the current title, but also upcoming titles. So just to give you some insight here. So with our first title, then one of the other team members was testing a battle and concluded that units needed to be replaced, or one of the sides needed an additional unit to make sure that it was not a black and white battle where it's always the case that one side wins simply because it's completely out of balance and so on. Then he had to change that. He had to note the data in an email. He had to send the email to me. I had to copy-paste all that information into the Xcode code. I had to create a new version, upload it to TestFlight. He could download it and then find out whether his changes worked. But so that during the whole testing and tweaking of battles, that can be massively time-consuming. So we concluded we need to do things different here. So what we made, and which is present in Battlefield Civil War, is that once you start a battle on the iPad, in the actual app, it first checks whether all the battle data is present in the app itself. And of course, in the version that's submitted to Apple, everything is present in the app itself. But when it was not present, it started looking for those same files, XML files, on our web server. So thereby, I gave him the opportunity, the option, to simply edit these files in an ASCII editor, upload them to our website, and they directly functioned in the game. Because for battles that were not ready with the testing process, all the data was not included in the app, with the result that the app would pull it from the web. And that thing has sped up the development or the test cycle around battles massively. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's where we have a shortcut on development time. And there are more things that we improved the reusability of the application, which simply gives us or creates a situation where we need less time to create another title.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's amazing. So this summer you're gonna have this game out. That's kind of quick. So that's gonna be very interesting. I'm actually already thinking of maybe bringing you back on the show so we can jump on that game over the summer.
I would be honored if I can be on the show again. I mean, excellent.
Awesome. Just to inform our viewers, the app is coming out this Thursday, which is going to be, let me get my calendar here, I should have that out.
6th of February.
6th of February, you got me beat, how about that? So yeah. It's going to be out February 6th. Usually Apple releases, is there a specific time that you set it up for, but usually Apple
You can just release it for the specific date, and as far as I understand it myself and have experienced it so far, it means that it's first available in countries like Japan and Australia, because those are the countries where it's the 6th of February the earliest compared to Europe and even later in the US. So there's a relation to the international time zone, and but I think it's available, let's say, at midnight. So the moment it becomes the 6th of February, in any specific region, it's available.
Beautiful. That's awesome. So stroke of midnight, February 6th, and the app is going to be priced, what's the price for the app?
$3.99.
Awesome. I'm going to put out my review. It will be out on the 6th, and I'll send you a link to it. And I think that's about it. Do you have any other things you want to add in?
No, not nothing strikes my mind currently.
All right, I guess that's it. I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you for coming on and sharing all your insights into the game development process as well as your next project, which I'm actually eager to play. Hopefully you have one of the scenarios for the U.S. side for, what was it, the I think the George Washington was part of the Fort Duquesne, I think, is it? I'm not totally 100% on the Seven Years' War, but I remember there was a battle with George Washington where
yeah.
surrounded by French forces, I think Fort Duquesne, I think, something like that.
Yeah, Duquesne,
yeah, there you go. And I think there was another big battle in Quebec that actually won the war, right, for the in the American theater, if I'm not mistaken, where General Wolfe was in command, I think, right?
And even was shot there.
I'm sorry, say that again?
He even lost his life there.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
That's there's this very nice painting depicting his last moments.
Yeah, I think I saw that painting. That was that's what inspired me to read the books. To see what happened. It's amazing how those things work, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to it, and let me get back, and I'm going to continue playing your game.
Okay.
I want to break that, right? And I will catch you next time. I'll send you an email when I get the review online.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks again for inviting me to your show, and we'll be in touch.
Awesome. Thank you, Mark, for coming on. I will catch you next time.
We will. Cheers.
Ha ha.